Welcome to Beach Books and Beyond with me, Monique Chambers. Each week, I invite a different guest from a different walk of life to talk to me about books that they've read, which have influenced them, and books they suggest we take to the beach this summer. You've no excuse not to be well read. Welcome to Beach Books and Beyond with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Diane Brincat. Now, Diane, you have a publishing background.
I do.
What? Tell us a bit more about it.
So, while I was at university quite a while ago, in 2012, my last year, I decided to pursue a master's in publishing. To be honest, it came to me when I was about 18 and I was reading Bridget Jones's Diary, and I thought, oh, Bridget is so cool. I mean, in spite of everything, she does seem to be, you know, at the time is what we used to read and watch on TV and think, oh, you know, Bridget's pretty cool. And I thought, like, what does Bridget do? And she works in publishing. And I thought, what is publishing? And I looked into it, and it's basically the book industry, which, mm-hmm. and I love books. So I thought, like, what do I need to work in publishing? And that's usually an English degree. And at the time, now it's kind of, it's not really the same anymore in the industry, but at the time, people said, you know, like, if you want to work in publishing, you need to get a master's okay. in publishing. So I spoke to my lecturers here who were extremely helpful, and they guided me towards applying for the degree and scholarships, etc., etc. So I eventually did a master's in publishing at Oxford Brookes University.
Okay, pretty cool then.
Yeah, it was quite an experience living in Oxford. I didn't really like it. It was very, very cold.
No, what about the punting?
I don't do punting. No. I did takeaways and movie nights and weekly journeys into London. That was definitely fun. And then after that, I moved back home for a little while to get some work experience.
Goes back to Malta, huh?
Yes, exactly. And then in 2014, I went back to London
okay.
and started working in publishing. And I was a marketing exec okay. with Jessica Kingsley Publishing. And they publish books about social issues. So whether it's mental health, autism, social work, they covered a range of subjects. Nowadays they have a gender diversity list, which is really, really interesting. So yeah, and then I moved back home, back to Malta in 2016.
So doing the marketing of books, you had to read lots, or you literally get the synopsis and you have to sell that out to distributors? What's
yes.
the sort of role there?
So there what we did was the editorial team would build an AI, an information sheet.
Okay.
And we would have all the information there about the book, the target audience, the print run, because
okay,
you also need to know, yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh.
If it's a mass market book, then, you know, you need to hit PR, you need to go really strong on social media. Whereas then if it's got a very short print run, then it's a very niche title
mm-hmm.
where ideally we just send out emails to different NGOs and organizations that are focused on that social issue, and that's how we get the copies out.
Okay.
But yeah, it was a very interesting experience because when I worked in Malta, I was working with a marketing agency, so I wasn't really selling products.
Okay.
Whereas you will discover that with publishing, although you think it's this really like idyllic situation where you're reading books all the time, it's an industry like any other. Mm. It's a business. In this case, the JKP slogan was books that make a difference. So I was very passionate about what I was selling, what I was marketing.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, you do have to hit your target and everything has to make sense.
And actually, those kinds of books, although they obviously help some people, might be a little bit depressing to read sometimes.
Yes, I had books that kind of had like trauma in the title, and like how to deal with sexual assault, how to deal with bereavement.
Yeah, so you are a good person to get stuck in a lift with, or you know, in the corner at a party.
Yes,
you know?
For sure. but then I had these lovely children's books that I used to work on, where it, you know, they were kids' books, illustrated kids' books about bereavement, helping kids deal with the bereavement
okay.
of a parent. And these books were extremely moving. but so useful. And the pressing part about it was thinking there's a market for this. There are kids whose
Absolutely.
Parents pass away, and sometimes the best way to help them get through it is by giving them a book about it.
Mm-hmm. And so, they can read in their own time and keep referring
yes, exactly.
over and over until
and
it's...
it explains the concept of death or the concept of depression. Mm-hmm. You know, they were very, very relevant topics applied to children in a way where you just think, how do I explain this to a child?
They could actually be useful for adults in that sense.
Yes, as well.
You know, not to be dumbed down, you know, yes, but just to simplify it, because you just mm-hmm. never know what to say to
yes.
anyone in any situation.
Precisely,
Okay. So did you get to work on any lighter books at all, or was it's all the sort of quite deep
I have to
dark.
Go back or... into the archives to think about this. Light books.
Anything that you just think, oh, I wish I'd written that.
Yes, but it's not a light book. There was this book called Take It As a Compliment, which was a graphic novel, mm-hmm. and it was basically a collection of comics that that depicted situations of sexual assault.
Okay.
And or sexual harassment. Mm-hmm. So that's where the name comes from, Take It As a Compliment.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And it could be something as simple as walking down the street and having someone yell something at you, or being on the tube and feeling hands all over you.
Yeah.
And the way they were depicted in the illustrations were extremely, extremely powerful. So in that sense, I loved the book because of that, because mm-hmm. it took a subject that is difficult for some people to talk about and kind of humanized it and made it easier to, not to digest, but for people, it's
to
easier
sort of
to bring up the conversation.
But
not particularly light.
Okay. Are there any books that you would have loved to have done the marketing on, or is there...
I got quite a few fun ones, to be honest. Mm-hmm. There was one that was called, and this is actually quite light, I guess, called Creative Successful Dyslexic. Mm-hmm. And that was a collection of essays from prominent personalities in the UK, mm-hmm. Talking about their dyslexia.
And their success there.
Exactly.
Okay.
So how you can be dyslexic, uh-huh. be creative, and be successful.
So very motivational. Element.
Yes, for sure.
So that's that would be the kind of thing that you could take to the beach.
Yes.
Take on your boat.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, sit on the porch.
Maybe not so much the other ones.
Yeah, no. You probably might not want to see, you know, have the brown cover, you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
you
yeah.
don't
to
actually
cover
see
up.
The title
yeah.
of what you're...
They might think it's 50 Shades of Grey, but...
Yeah, they could be worse, yeah.
Yeah.
So what sorts of books do you read for fun and for pleasure?
Good question. I recently have started reading a lot more non-fiction than I used to.
Okay.
I used to read a lot of young adult fiction and nowadays new adult fiction. So, mm-hmm. you know, if I was 16 and reading young adult novels, that made perfect sense. As you grow older, get tired about listening to 16-year-old problems. But there is a fantastic author called Rainbow Rowell, and she wrote a book called Fangirl, which is about these twins who just start college at 18. And I think I read that at the age of 21.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very relatable back then. But case in point, I feel nowadays there aren't that many books, many fictional novels that kind of that are easy to relate to for people in my age range.
Okay.
And I'm 27, so sometimes it feels like it's either the clueless new adult
uh-huh.
or the clueless 30-something who's completely reevaluating their life. I recently read a novel called Not Working about a woman who up and quit her job because she hated it,
mm-hmm.
tried to freelance, tried to figure her life out. It's fairly relatable.
That could be my story.
It is relatable in this, but I felt like, oh, maybe this is me in a couple of years' time. I'm not quite there yet.
So it's like a life lesson ready plan
yes,
for you.
Yes, yes.
How did it work out?
I think she went back to her old job. It was something silly like that. Like she left, she got a break from the job, she tried to do freelance, and then she kind of realized that really wasn't that
she
bad
missed
in
the Christmas
first
parties.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically,
yeah,
I think there
Friday
is actually
pizza.
A chapter about the Christmas parties. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there is, I feel like with nonfiction, there you get a lot more books of essays coming out now where you get celebrities or very prominent personalities in particular industries talking about their life experience, and it's just more relatable. I mean, relatable to a degree if it's a
yes,
celebrity writing an autobiography, you're sort of like, I don't really relate going to the Oscars, but okay.
I don't really relate having, you know, Louis Vuitton underwear. Just, yeah. You know, just nonsense, some of yes. the stuff, that some of the ways they live. But what about, so you see there's a gap in the market for this genre.
I have a theory about this.
Okay.
I think that nowadays, with the way that people have, the way that people have really clung on to series, mm-hmm. like Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, etc., etc., there is a lot more scope for fan fiction, mm-hmm. and I feel like people are turning towards that nowadays because the world now is so much more diverse than it used to be. The publishing industry is still catching up with this, where there are a lot of issues related to diversity in race, in gender, in sexuality, mm-hmm. And the younger audience is taking this into their hands and creating stories where everyone can identify with someone.
But what do you think about all of this fantastical stuff and mm-hmm. escapism? Because they say the Harry Potter, Game of Thrones, it's mm-hmm. it's not really real, you know.
No.
It's, you know, escapism to a point. I loved Harry Potter, but Game of Thrones is not something mm-hmm. I've ever gotten into.
Ah, well, especially because it's escapism to a degree where yeah. they're like, no, because, you know, it's perfectly normal for women to get raped in this scenario. I'm like, yeah, is it perfectly normal to have dragons? No. So your logic there is a bit flawed. I think fantasy is something that has appealed to people across the ages. Nowadays, this is a bit like when all the apocalyptic, the dystopian novels started coming out a few yeah. years ago, and it was a case of people trying to get away from the hunky-dory, everything's okay storylines that were coming out and saying, like, our world, in a post 9/11 world, mm-hmm. we don't feel safe. Things aren't hunky-dory. Let's read stories about that. I think that's now not quite as relevant. I don't think they're as big anymore. You don't get that many dystopian novels.
But what do you sort of like as you're reading? Do you like that kind of escapism, or do you like a bit more realistic, relatable? Do you like actually, I want to see what that character's doing because I feel I'm going to be her? Or do you like, you know, non-fiction in general? What's the sort of book that you go for?
Case in point, that's why I said I'm starting to read a lot more non-fiction, mm-hmm. where you get, like, it could be anyone. I mean, there's YouTubers now are getting contracts to write books. But you know what? They're good. Ah. They're good books.
Okay.
To a degree, they're kind of textual versions of their videos. You've mm-hmm. watched, you know, 5 of their videos, you can read the book. It's the same thing.
And do they milk and milk and milk? Or is it, or they actually can be interesting, sort of?
I feel that the ones I've read so far, maybe it's because they're good YouTubers, and so they're good content creators, and ultimately that's what it's about. Mm-hmm. I mean, I suppose that there are some YouTubers who kind of just do challenges, and they, you know, it's a lot more about entertainment, but the ones that I happen to follow focus a lot more on current issues, in the sense that there is one YouTuber called Hannah Witten, who focuses on sex education.
Okay.
And so she wrote a book called Doing It, mm-hmm. and I read it. It was very interesting. I felt like it was a little bit too educational, so probably just for maybe a younger version of myself, maybe mm-hmm. not me so much at this point. But, you know, she goes through all of the different aspects of sex education, and if you're 14 and your parents, your school teachers don't talk to you about sex ed in an effective way, then this book is perfect for you.
And I guess, you know, we're trying to encourage people to read more books, so if it has to be a book from a YouTuber, then it has to be a book from a YouTuber.
Case in point, definitely. I started reading again because I was a very avid reader as a child, but when I was about 10, that kind of died down. But there was the Princess Diaries movie with Julie Andrews and Anne Hathaway, which I loved, and I started reading the books, and I went from reading the first book by Meg Cabot to mm-hmm. reading all 40 of her books, and, you know, I actually have pictures, you know, from my first digital camera, where I had 5 books on my shelf, mm-hmm. and I now have probably about 400.
Ah, okay.
And you see the transition, you know, from...
And you do keep books?
Yes, I have a massive book buying problem.
It could be worse.
Could it?
No, really good. You could be buying like nonsense, at least you're buying books.
Well, this is what my mother tells my father, because my father's always just like, why are you spending so much money on these books? What could you possibly get out of them? Because he doesn't understand why I have to have 400 of them. He's like, if you've read 200 of them, surely you've gotten, but surely there's books, some overlap.
There's some books you go back to, yes?
Yes, definitely. For sure.
What, which ones do you go back to?
Bridget Jones, mm-hmm. when I want to kind of cheer myself up, mm-hmm. I definitely
you
go
cheer back. Yourself up with Bridget Jones, okay.
It's so funny. Oh, it's just so incredibly funny. Yeah. Just the way it's written, and in fact, I work in digital marketing now, mm-hmm. and I do content writing, okay. and I do have a very particular style, and people have said, like, oh, I really like the way you write, because it's so comical. It's always a little bit tongue-in-cheek, and I got that from Bridget Jones and from Meg Cabot.
So we should change your name.
To have more of a snappy name, eh?
So if you've just joined us, you're listening to Monique Chambers on Beach Books and Beyond. This week my guest is Diane Brincat, and she's just about to tell us, she doesn't know yet, about a couple of your favourite books that you would recommend that we pick up, and they're probably in your library of 400 odd books. So tell us a bit about, one of your favourites that you would just like, oh, you've got to read this book, it's life-changing.
A life-changing book that I've read would definitely have to be Handmaid's Tale.
Mm-hmm. I haven't read it, actually. I don't know anything about it. I've just seen the posters.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so Handmaid's Tale was written by Margaret Atwood and came out in the mid-80s, I believe. Mm-hmm. It's a dystopian novel about a society where women are mostly cast out of society in the sense where they no longer have any agency whatsoever.
Okay. When is the set? When sort of year?
The near future, I think it's something
future.
Like...
Okay.
How would you say it? I don't even
I
know how
we're,
you
we're in 20-something, aren't we? 2018.
So it would be... So instead of it being 2018, it would be 2090.
Oh, okay, so it has.
Because I don't know how to say 2100. So
yeah.
2100, yeah, that's exactly what it would be. And so... Then women are kind of grouped together. There are the wives mm-hmm. of the men in charge, or else you have the handmaids, mm-hmm. you have the Marthas, and you have the Jezebels. So basically you have the women who kind of perform duties in terms of their housekeepers, their teachers, etc., etc.
Okay.
Then you have the handmaids who are there to act as surrogates for the wives who cannot bear children.
Okay.
And you have the Jezebels, who are women who are cast out of society completely.
They can do neither, or they sort of...
No, exactly. They've been... So the way it would work is that the Marthas, there are other titles, mm. not just the Martha, but these women who have a function, basically, the teachers, etc., are good women.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the handmaids, who are women who have been trained to become surrogates, mm-hmm. but there's an element where they had done something bad in the past,
okay.
whether it was engaging in a homosexual relationship or doing drugs or cheating.
Okay, so this is like a punishment to...
Exactly, okay. exactly. And then the Jezebels are those women who are unrepentant.
Ah.
About their...
I'm not going to ask which camp you're in.
Let's not go there.
So the main character, obviously, is one of the handmaids.
The handmaids, yes. And case in point, you know, like, she is designated an officer, a commander, and so she becomes known as Offred.
Okay.
Of Fred.
Ah.
So kind of, like...
Okay.
What is it? Alfredo. So the novel kind of is it written in first perspective? In first person, I think it is. But it's written from her perspective, mm-hmm. basically. And it kind of maps out how women went from having all the rights that we do now to having their bank accounts frozen, to having to kind of be separated from their families, and all the hardship that comes with that, uh-huh. and her grappling with this brainwashing that she's undergone to kind of fit in with this role.
The new order that
she's... Exactly. Mm. Because if you don't go with it, you're exiled or you're killed, or in one case, one of the one of the characters, I believe, gets circumcised.
Ooh.
With on a woman. Yeah, so it's basically, although it sounds like a really harsh novel, it is, but it really makes you think about how the patriarchal values in our society can be extremely confining,
mm-hmm.
In ways that one thing will lead to another, where case in point, with the current political sphere, mm-hmm. You've got some people are just saying, you know, like, no, it's not a big deal, there's this one thing that needs to change, and it's like, if that one thing changes, it's going to spiral into women no longer having a vote.
Ah.
You know, and there's that lack of appreciation that women only got the vote less than 100 years ago.
Yeah.
So
this is back to that sort of world. So this is the sort of thing you would read at the beach for leisure. It does sound a bit harrowing.
It is incredibly harrowing. I had read it for my A-level, my English A-level.
Okay.
But then, you know, like, I had read Jane Eyre as a child and then also read it at university for...
So there's a theme.
Yes. But I think, speaking as a young woman, I think that there aren't enough female-centric narratives.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it is the kind of thing that you have to kind of read these really harrowing novels and stories about the plight of being a woman, because it makes you appreciate what we have and what we should have.
And what other people don't have.
Yes, precisely. Because it doesn't just apply to us, you know. You can say, yes, I have a vote, but some women in some cultures can't drive.
Mm.
So.
Yeah. And what about Jane Eyre you mentioned there? That's a pretty big book as well.
That's quite a tome.
Yes.
I think I was probably 14 when I started reading that, and I found it very difficult to get into at first, because she talks about her childhood and not so much being bullied, but it was just a bit like, oh, there are these Victorian kids who are picking on each other and doing weird stuff, like throwing books at one another. What?
You think so what? Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. it's like, doesn't beat having a basketball thrown at your face like I did when I was a kid. So I was like,
but repeatedly or just once? Because, you know.
Repeatedly. It was my brother.
Okay.
He made it the daily thing. But actually getting through that part, then you kind of start to see the very feminist leanings that Charlotte Bronte had when she wrote the book. And again, you kind of, this is what I felt growing up in 1990s Malta, where my brother could do whatever he wanted,
mm-hmm.
and I had to sit at table and be very well behaved and not really join in with any of the fun. And I think we're very lucky that I saw the culture changing, so mm-hmm. I could change with it. But I do know that if you put someone in a passive position, they might very well take it on and not change from that.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to find representation in a book that's 200 years old, where this character is saying, you know what, I was told that I must fit into this very small box, but I don't fit into that box and I don't want to make myself fit, so I'm going to do my own thing.
And at the time as well, when that was written, obviously,
it's
like going through a roller coaster today, mm-hmm. let alone
For sure.
In those times. We started it at school, it was kind of, almost too much to take on. It's almost too unrealistic.
Yeah.
But the sort of thing you can keep going back to and back to and back to in life. I don't know if I'd take it to the beach unless I really wanted to get a serious tan. That's definitely. But then on the other hand, it is quite gripping that you just don't move. You sort of...
I had recently read a book about, again, it's kind of non-fiction.
Mm.
It's called How to Be a Heroine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically this woman who revisits all the books she read as a child, whether it was Wuthering Heights, Jane Eyre,
mm-hmm.
the Jane Austen novels, Gone with the Wind, and she just kind of looked at the heroines
mm-hmm.
again based on what she remembered.
Okay.
So what she felt at the time mm-hmm. when she first read the book and now reading it again. So you could take Jane Eyre to the beach and kind of read. You've already read it, so you know what's happening, but there are just some lines that probably pop out to you and say, I didn't understand that when I was...
Exactly.
14, but now this line makes so much more sense to me.
You go quoting it in nightmares.
Wearing a t-shirt.
No, but that's quite frightening when you sort of... I've another thing. I read Wind in the Willows every mm-hmm. year, and I've just recently got not a first edition, unfortunately, but the unabridged version
okay.
of it. And I still recognise people as characters, and I still think my house is Toad Hall, where we have these fantastic parties, and, you know, you still... I walk through the garden and I make sure I step on the stones because I don't know what's going on underneath there. And, and I really think that these animals are having a wild time in my garden. And I don't care what anyone thinks if they think I'm completely barking. But you take characters with you, and there's some that just stay with you, and you go back to a book and back to a book, and just you find different people doing different things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, that's relevant now. Or I've met, I've met that person.
Yeah.
Now that's who they are. That's who you had to try and describe them.
Yeah, for sure.
So any other good beach reads that we should be looking out for this year? Anything?
Something maybe a little bit lighter, I was thinking, because I do know that I went. But you asked me for life-changing books, and those were the ones that really made a difference. Although, like I mentioned earlier, you know, when I read that Princess Diaries book, which I didn't really have that big of... I think you go through that phase when you're a kid where you think, oh, reading's for nerds, I don't want to be a nerd. Uh-huh. But having read that book, I got a much... bigger appreciation for books through that and for reading, because every other book I'd been introduced to at that point was dull. It was the same old story to me. I'm not a massive fan of Harry Potter, no disrespect towards J.K. Rowling, but it's just not my kind of thing. Case in point, because reading about a male wizard, I can't relate to him being a boy. So from there I was like, here is a young adult series that's about a girl and about problems that girls go through, whether it's growing pains, boy problems,
and these are good to read actually if you're, you know, becoming a parent or a parent or an auntie or something as well, because you can identify. So although it's fun, it's kind of educational and reminds you a bit of being young again.
I actually had a conversation with a couple of women the other day, and they were kind of saying, like, oh, it's so difficult to deal with our kids nowadays. Like, I don't know what's going on in their head. And I just started saying all of these things, and they looked at me, and they're like, but you don't have children. I was like, no, but I've read, I was a teen a few years ago, and I've read so many young adult novels that you can kind of
put yourself back in their position, and it's a different Malta, a different world. And
for sure.
Yeah. Okay, well, we've got to leave it there. I could talk to you about books all day. So that's my guest this week. Diane Brincat's been talking to me, Monique Chambers, on Beach, Books and Beyond. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for joining me, Monique Chambers, on this week's Beach, Books and Beyond. I'd also like to thank Samuel Attard and Carmelo Greg for helping me to produce this programme. Join us again next week for Beach, Books and Beyond, here on Campus FM.